present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome once again to the news quiz. We start with an announcement from Psychic News, read by Catriona Young.
This Saturday's psychic awareness workshop has been cancelled due to unforeseen circumstances.
Thank you, Muriel Hill of London, for sending us that. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Richard Ingrams, and from the Daily Telegraph, Jane Thin. Facing them, on my left, Alan Corran, and from the Independent, Mark Lawson. Before we start round one, here's an item in the Countryside News, sent to us by Steve Taylor of Wickenbrook.
Members were pleased to welcome back the treasurer, Mr. Brian Thomas, who's recovering after breaking his ankle. He was able to report a satisfactory balance.
Richard, your question. Who have been told to watch their language?
Is it Mr. Mellor, by any chance?
No.
Well, most of the things are this week. Or it could be to do with teachers again, is it?
It could be. Yes, indeed it is.
I think it's to do with everybody saying we've got to learn to speak proper.
You're exactly right.
Because they've been listening to Derek Jameson for too long on Radio 2.
But you're taking over, aren't you, on Radio 2?
Oh, so yes, I am. Thanks for the plug. That is on Saturday, or rather this afternoon, as we call it.
Or last Saturday, if you're listening to the repeat.
Jolly confusing. Anyway, Barry Adler's coming on.
Oh, my God. Yes, you're absolutely right, Richard. These are the new teaching guidelines which require a return to standard English, even outside the classroom. So playground bullies threatening to kick little Tommy's head in will now be severely reprimanded and told to kick his head in. There'll also be more emphasis on clear handwriting, except for those wanting to study medicine. And compulsory Shakespeare readings for those wanting to take a combined degree in arts, football and politics, of which more later. Jane, welcome to the programme. Your first question is this. Whose orchestral manoeuvres promised bite-sized pleasure?
Well, this has to be Classic FM, I'm afraid to
it
say.
Is
it's
Classic
a non-BBC
FM
question. It's the first commercial national radio station launching this week, and Richard loved it, apparently.
And it's all thanks to David Mellor. I think he deserves a cheer for this.
The man who loves to make beautiful music, as they say.
You're absolutely right, Jane. The morning show is presented by Henry Kelly, who features a heady mix of Brahms, Bach and betting. Monday's long shot was that he would last the week. One feature is Henry Kelly's hum line, on which a caller hums a well-known piece and a panel identifies the tune for them. Sadly, the authoritative panel of classical experts has already been stumped by one caller who hummed that orchestral masterpiece, the theme from Dr. Finlay's Casebook. It was clearly above their heads. Mark, welcome back to the programme.
Thank you.
Who sent a PC from the seaside?
PC?
Politically correct postcard, I'm informed.
Ah, yes. This is a reference to the Trade Unions Congress.
Absolutely so.
Which was addressed by Howard Davis, the Director General of the CBI, the first boss to address them ever. And only one person applauded, but that was all right, because it counted as 4 million people applauding under the rules of the TUC.
Well done. Absolutely right.
The question is actually about their blacklist, I think, isn't it?
Well, it's about...
So you can't say words like blacklist anymore.
That's right.
Or blackguard.
That's right.
And you can't do anything like manpower or man hours. It could be person power.
You also can't say things like deaf to reason or crippled economy, which means that TUC will never be able to discuss British industry again.
It is the politically correct TUC who wish to outlaw such racist terms as blackleg, blacklist and black economy. So they're holding their annual conference in the seaside town of Not Too Bright Pool. TUC or Tuck, still reeling from the honour of having a cheese biscuit named after them. Also reaffirm their commitment to the right to work by trying to make their own leader, Norman Willis, redundant. The lovable mop-top Arthur Scargill was so angered by one speech from the boss of the CBI that he staged a walkout, taking his entire membership with him, chanting, "One out, both out." Alan, guess what? Here's a piece of music for you.
Blue is the colour of football.
question is, who's been telling Short's stories?
Well, this is a very tiny story tucked away at the, the bottom of the Christian Science Monitor. And it's, I can't remember the man involved. It's some dreadful old slapper who likes likes making hay with men who wear football strip underwear and smacking their bottoms. It's called something like a Rancher Sanchez.
That's right.
There was a person involved, but I think he's a great and good Minister of the Arts, Broadcasting, Fun and Heritage, isn't he, Richard?
Who's suffered enough, I think.
Yeah. Not for him, I understand.
It's all about the return of Antonia de Sancha, or to use her professional name as a serious actress, Yo-Yo Draws. The talented lady who juggles her career as a serious actress with the equally demanding profession of financial advisor. More intimate details have emerged concerning her lover, who has suffered so much, we'll refer to him as Mr. X. Anyway, David X, Minister for the Arts. He liked to dress in Chelsea football strip, complete with a number on his back, indicating his preferred position. And the scores at the end of the first round have reverted to the norm for this programme after last week's shock horror surprise, but they are 4-4. Well done, everyone. Well done. Well, we start round two with a mystery from Israel reported in the Jewish Chronicle.
A skeleton discovered with a knife stuck in its ribs is believed by pathologists to be at least 3,700 years old. A police spokesman said it was unlikely that a suspect would be found.
Well, thank you, Al Weinberg of Chigwell, for sending us that. Richard, your question again. Who won't be enjoying an Indian summer this winter?
Who won't? This is David Mellor, who's been left out of... I'm sorry, not Miller. David Gower, I should have said, who has suffered enough. He's been foolishly omitted from the team.
Because he's over 35.
Well, they thought he was an older, didn't they?
Yes, you're absolutely right.
No, but it's all because Gooch doesn't like him, really, isn't it? Because he wrote rude things about Gooch in his book.
Do you think that's the case?
No, it is alleged. It is alleged. Shall I read out an apology to Gooch at this stage?
Absolutely right. Following the controversial series against Pakistan, English selectors have become involved in another big cricketing scandal, that devious underhand practice known as picking the team. Selectors say 35-year-old David Gower has been left out to make way for younger players like 36-year-old Mike Gatting, rewarded at last for the great advances made in human rights since his visit to South Africa. Clearly, the selectors don't think they'll miss a player of Gower's class. Any fool can get the runs in India.
Well, that's terrible.
Jane, your question again. What novel decision brought a few to book?
This is, of course, all to do with the deeply acrimonious bloodletting that's been going on with Mr. Lawson over there this week. It's the Booker Prize. And apparently each book is loathed by one of the judges at least, and Mark is keeping very shtum about which one he hates. It's the Booker Prize. Lots of gore, but no really, really famous people on the list.
Yeah, absolutely right. It's the annual release of the Booker Prize list, a time when writers and publishers join together and harmoniously stab one another in the back. Critics state the whole event is nothing more than a cynical marketing ploy, a claim strenuously denied by Penguin's latest signing, Paul Gascoigne. Mark, will you have a listen to this?
Anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than you.
No, you can.
Yes, I can.
No, you can.
Yes, I can.
No, you can.
Yes, I can. Yes, I can.
Anything you can be, I can be greater. Sooner or later, I'm greater than you.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Mark, the question is, where does the buck stop, by George?
Madison.
I know this.
Well, the George is probably the former... Not, no, sorry, we're a few weeks early. The former president of the United States, George Bush, he... Something to do with bucks.
I know this.
About the American economy.
Right. The American economy has collapsed. It's reached the state where it's $2 to a pound, And this means that George Bush is extremely unlikely to be re-elected.
Quite wrong.
Quite wrong. A bonus to Richard Ingram's if he gets it right.
Well, I think it's all to do with the strange quarrel that has broken out between Bush and Clinton as to which of the two most resembles the late Harry S. Truman.
Quite right.
He was a Democrat.
He was a Democrat, so Clinton is more likely to win. But they're squabbling about each claiming to be Truman for some reason.
Absolutely right. You're well done. A bonus. Well done, Richard. We're bang up to date here with the story about the 1940s United States President Harry S. Truman and the competition between Messrs. Bush and Clinton to be most like him, apart from him having been dead since 1972, of course. Meanwhile, taking up Truman's mottos, if you can't stand the heat, stay out of the kitchen, and the buck stops here, Dan Quayle was last seen dressed in a pinny looking for a large rabbit. Alan, your question again. What permanent wave of anger has cut a village in two?
Now, this is a strange guy. There's a chap called O'Donnell, Dr. O'Donnell.
Yes.
Who's on the parish council of somewhere, totally unimportant. But as it's always the way with unimportant parish councils, they say he was abusing his power as a parish councillor when his wife came back from their hairdresser's with a barnet in tatters. And she'd been had a go at by the local hairdresser. And Dr. O'Donnell walked in and said, "I'm Dr. O'Donnell. Not only am I a doctor, I'm a member of this parish council, and you've done my wife a wrong turn. She's got green hair, you've removed nothing from her wart, and she's walking funny."
Datchet.
He says it was Datchet. I don't know where Datchet is, but I wouldn't have my hair down there. Well, maybe... maybe I have. Maybe that explains a lot. But, I mean, that is the story. But it is still unresolved, I believe.
Yes, well, it's this week's big political story, featuring unrest in Datchet Parish Council. Trouble erupted when councillor's wife, Anne O'Donnell, emerged from Warren Archer's hairdressing salon with a cut she felt could be described as being half Jean Shrimpton and half Corn Circle. She then attacked the unfortunate stylist in a two-page letter, which she pinned to the village notice board. The feud has divided the community, not down the middle, just a little to the right, and the ladies argued with the hairdresser and left poor Mr. Archer in tears. He was particularly upset at the suggestion that with his surname and scissors skills, he would be better off sheep-shearing in Ambridge. And the scores at the second round are quite unusual, because Alan and Mark are 6... but Richard and Jane are 9 in the lead. We start round 3 with a tale of intrigue from the Sussex Express.
A police helicopter and officers with tracker dogs searched the area around Pevensey Bay for 18 hours after a couple reported a possible murder. They'd seen a woman enter the woods in the area, and later a shifty-looking man emerged carrying her dress. The hunt was called off when a Frenchman went to the police and explained that he was a transvestite who'd gone into the woods to change.
Well, thank you, Mrs. M. Jackson of Alfriston, for sending us that. Richard, who found the trial a trial? A legal story.
A legal story. Indeed.
Are you stumped?
Is it to do with cricket again?
No, it isn't. It's to do with a jury.
This is a woman who spent the whole time in... I think it was in Liverpool, wasn't it, in trial, and she was spent the whole time filling out her bus ticket form and things like this. Eventually they had to dismiss her, and she was kicked off the jury because she hadn't been paying attention to a case that was so fascinating, I completely forgot what it was about. But
it was about unrest on the estate,
it was
wasn't
to do
it?
With
that's right, it was
Joy
the Meadowell Estate.
Hang on. This is our
answer,
question.
We've got it.
It was all to do with rats.
Female juror.
That's right. Absolutely.
Have you reached your verdict, Chairman? Or can we bang
yes, I have. I have come.
Norma McKenna.
Pop.
Norma McKenna.
What's that?
No, you got it wrong. It's Susan McKenna.
Oh, he lied.
Half a mark. Give him a half. Go on, give him a half, and we'll work it out later. It's all about Susan McKenna, a woman juror who was discharged by a judge for failing to pay proper attention during a trial. She was found guilty of going through the stubs of her checkbook during evidence and was even spotted filling in a job application form. Let's hope it wasn't for anything in air traffic control. The move saddened Mrs. McKenna. She'd just about finished a 1,000-piece jigsaw. and asked to leave the courtroom. However, Mr. Justice Johnson had no alternative but to dismiss her. All that fidgeting about was putting him off his crossword. Jane, you did so well on that. Here's a piece of music for you.
Food, glorious food, hot sausage and mustard. While we're in the mood, cold jelly and custard. Cheese pudding and saveloys. What next is the question? Rich gentlemen have it, boys.
Indigestion.
Good enough for classical FM. The question is, whose fat chance of a comeback wasn't given a Yaru?
This is the politically correct BBC in Shepherd's Bush, who decided that Billy Bunter is stoutest and they won't have him on telly anymore, nor they have Wurzel Gummidge because he's oldest, and a whole lot of other PC ideas that are being perpetrated there.
Cyril Smith has also been banned.
He's leftist, I suppose. You're absolutely right, Jane. Well answered. It's the BBC who have rejected plans for an animated version of Billy Bunter because the horizontally challenged chap is stoutest, as you so rightly say, and his tales of gluttony and greed might tempt youngsters to follow his unhealthy example and become senior television executives. Some cynics have claimed that with charter renewal on the horizon, the BBC's move may have been politically motivated. Now is not the time to draw attention to a fat person in shorts and glasses. You're ahead of me. A man who enjoys his food and occasional spanking. Now, far away in that area, let's pause for a cutting from the Daily Mirror.
Following promotions for Phil Constable and Steve Sargent of Winchester Police, Constable Constable is now Sergeant Constable, and Sergeant Sergeant is now Inspector Sergeant.
Mark, who relaunched The Art of Getting Lost?
The Art of Getting Lost. There can't be a David Mellor angle here.
I'm helping them with a bit of mime.
What?
It's something to do with a lost aeroplane.
It's not about Biggles, who came down at the pub.
Wiggles comes late.
It's probably the wrong answer, but we might get some marks for courage here. You were impersonating a flamingo. And
yes, later.
It was revealed this week that flamingos are usually pink, and the reason is because they eat shrimps. But in Britain, they don't. They're fed a pink dye. And the EC has now banned this dye, which means that British flamingos will be grey.
That's terrific. I was actually miming. For those of you who like these things, in the school of the school of Marcel Marceau, a ship at sea.
Must be Norman Lamont in that.
Well, not necessarily, no. This was the return of intrepid sailor Jack Lammerman and the good ship Helga Maria, making the greatest contribution to navigation since the invention of fog. Jack emulated Columbus's achievement in finding America while looking for Japan by discovering the Faroe Islands while looking for Whitby. Jack and his crew zigzagged 8,000 miles around the Atlantic, running out of food and losing their engine before setting fire to the deck to attract attention. Next time, before setting out, he's going to shoot an albatross for luck. I'm surprised you didn't know that one, particularly after my mime. Anyway, Alan, your question now. Who couldn't find ways of making him talk?
This is not the German golfer who turned up at Heathrow.
No, that comes later on.
Everything comes later on this show.
I know.
I want something that comes now.
The one that comes now is also about Germans.
I rather gathered that from your mime of a boat. A German ways of making him talk.
Yeah.
This is very interesting. Helmut Kohl.
What? No. This is just an ordinary average bloke who didn't say a lot.
Is this a man who only did three words a day to his wife?
That's right.
I didn't know he was German. I thought he lived next door. We're all like that in our street. I mean, he says things like, how are you? Or who are you? And they ended up in court. I mean, I think they were divorced because he didn't say anything to
her. That's right.
Like, when do we get a divorce? In German, one word will usually do for about 17. So three words, you could probably say a great deal.
That's right. It's all about strong and silent German, Ernie Horst. who spoke on average only three words a day to his wife. It took him a fortnight to recover from saying "Ich du" on his wedding day. Long-suffering Susan told a German court he managed just 26 words in 2 months of marriage. The longest sentence she recorded in a notebook was, "This coffee tastes like washing up liquid." Who said romance was dead? When asked if he had anything to say about the inevitable annulment, the laconic ex-husband shook his head twice. He's getting quite chatty now, he's single. And the scores at the end of round three are Alan and Mark, 8.5. And Richard Ingram and Jane Thin are in the lead still with 13. Before we start the final round, here's a cutting from the Bangkok Post.
Commenting on a complaint from Mr. Arthur Purdy about a large gas bill, a spokesman for Northwest Gas said, "We agree it was rather high for the time of year. It's possible that Mr. Purdy has been charged for the gas used up during the explosion that blew his house to pieces."
Thank you, David Boylett of Woking, for sending us that. And please, could you explain in another letter to us how the hell it came from the Bangkok Post? Anyway, enough of that. Richard, have a listen to this.
Days may not be found always. That's when I'll be there. Just a day, not for just a year, but always.
And you'd be pleased to know that was always sung by Barbara Cartland. Oh, no wonder Princess Diana is so often sick. Relative like that in the family. Richard, your question, how might you get 4 telegrams from the Queen?
Jane tells me that it's something to do with an amazing wonder drug that makes everyone into mega oldies.
Can we fill in the
details? You lived to 400, but your memory runs out at 395, which even would defeat Richard, I think.
Yes. Wouldn't it be an awful thought, the news quiz going on 400 years?
Sometimes I feel that it has.
That's what I feel, yes.
It's all about how to live to be 400 years old. This is the forecast by American scientists who've managed to extend the life expectancy of flies and think the same could be done for humans. You might live to be 400, but you won't think much of the special diet. It all sounds suspiciously like a scheme to increase the circulation of the oldie or to improve Barbara Cartland's hopes of finding a toy boy. Jane, your question now. What pedigree chump bit off more than he could chew?
This is the man who had a pie made out of pedigree chum by his girlfriend, isn't
That's
it?
Right.
Brilliant idea. They had a terrific round. She'd discovered him in bed with somebody, and so she didn't say anything, but she made him a delicious pie out of pedigree chum. And then I think the Daily Mail made their reporter eat some pedigree chum. It turns out to be just an ordinary kind of meat pies type stuff.
Is that the one that Clement Freud advertises?
Probably he eats it himself. That's why he's so taciturn. Yes, you're absolutely right, Jane. This is the angry woman who served her boyfriend dog food pie after he admitted having an affair. Jenny Bloor created the dish using a tin of pedigree chum. Gives a whole new meaning to the phrase, top breeders recommended. But instead of excusing himself and dashing off to the nearest lamppost, the unfaithful fellow actually enjoyed the meal so much that he asked for a second helping. He then went off and buried his knife and fork in the garden. Since publication of the story, Ms. Bloor has been inundated with requests for the recipe, including one from an MP's wife who lives in Putney. Mark, who dropped in for a pint out of the blue?
Blue, Chelsea.
This has been hinted at earlier.
It's a man in an old flying helmet.
That's right.
And an old jacket. And he's got an old Tiger Moth. And it does about 3 miles to the gallon. Every time he goes up, it comes down again. And no references to anybody else who's ever been mentioned on this programme. And he came down outside a pub. And went into the pub and said, "I have a large Esso." It's like that, isn't it? It's called Biggles in all the papers.
It all happened at Brookhouse Inn when a pilot in a 50-year-old biplane landed in the pub car park. and popped in for a drink, only to rush out again when the bell for last orders went, shouting, "Scramble, scramble, bandits at 3 o'clock!" Low flyer Anthony West then went to the petrol station next door to refuel and take on essential supplies. He took off again, but soon crash-landed in a field where it took a Navy helicopter 2 hours to find him and another 3 to pick up 4 dozen tumblers, several bags of barbecue briquettes and a white plastic patio set. Alan, who landed in the Von Trapp because he couldn't quite swing it?
Oh, this is the other Jerry.
Yeah.
This is a man who turned up at Heathrow claiming that he was a major golfer. No, he didn't. He turned up at Dover because he had a car with him.
Yeah.
In a golf bag in the back.
Yeah.
And the customs inspector thought he didn't look like a golfer. He was probably wearing a helmet with a spike in it or something. I don't really keep up with modern Euro activities. Anyway, so they said, if you're a golfer, show us your swing. So he took a number 6 iron out by the wrong end and swung it in the wrong direction. And they said, you're not a golfer at all. We suspect you have other things in your golf bag. And they took out 2 ton of cannabis or something.
That's right. That's what
also,
I said.
Also, he liked to make love while wearing a Borussia Mönchengladbach football shirt.
Yeah, absolutely right, Alan. It's the German businessman who told customs officers he'd arrived in Britain for a golfing holiday, only to be uncovered as a drug smuggler when he was asked to demonstrate his swing. Carl Melms was sentenced to 5 years in prison. Let's hope he learns his lesson. The caddy should always carry the drugs. Before we reach the final scores, let's see what cuttings the teams have brought along. Richard, have you brought something for us?
Something about football from the Western Morning News. Plymouth Argyle manager Peter Shilton yesterday described Dalton as an attacking player who scores goals. I think he's a very exciting prospect. He's a two-footed player, which is unusual in football.
Jane, what have you brought for us?
And mine comes from the Daily Express, and it says an elderly man killed a penguin because he thought it was a homicidal chicken, he told a court yesterday. Nimrod Nabini, 76, said it pecked his leg while he was on a beach. It looked like it was going to kill me, he explained. Pensioner Mr. Nabini, who'd never seen a penguin before, said, food is scarce. I thought, now I must take it home for a meal.
Mark?
This is from the Westmorland Gazette, and it's about a man called Mellor, surprisingly enough.
Oh, really? No relation, particularly.
Someone who seems to be getting a toehold in this programme, I suppose, this week. But he's an Andrew James Mellor, and unfortunately he was charged with possessing cannabis. Headline, motorist was on cannabis, but the story has a happy ending. The court heard that Mellor had turned over a new leaf since the incident.
Thank you. Alan.
I have a hero this week, although he's a villain. Some Leicester Mercury. The officers became suspicious when they saw Grayson's transit van parked behind the church at 3 a.m. with a pile of lead guttering beside it. When Grayson reappeared, they asked him how the lead had got there, and he replied, I don't know, it's probably a miracle.
Well, by some miracle, we've come to the end of the programme. Let's have a look at the final scores. Well, Alan and Mark have done awfully well. They got 12.5, but a sensation has happened because Richard and Jane have won this week with a magnificent 17. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from the Sudbury Mercury, sent in by Sarah and Mark Robinson of Sudbury.
12-year-old Roger Catchpole was granted a shotgun licence this summer and learnt the safe use of a gun from his grandmother, Joan Catchpole, 78, who frequently shoots herself.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Richard Ingrams, Alan Corran, Jane Thin and Mark Lawson. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Katrina Young. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson and Robert Fraser-Steele. The producer was Colin Swash.